Special Committee on Budget to order here, July 20th, 2005. Appreciate everyone being here. We have work session on several items. One, we're going to hold. I think the amendments are not quite what we all expected, so we're going to hold and work Senate Bill 232 yet one more time and see if we can't get it right. So we'll do that at our next meeting. Let's start with Senate Bill 5632, Bonds and Other Financing Agreements. Senator Morse, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 5632 increases the aggregate amount of various types of debt that may be issued by the state. It does not provide expenditure limitations for debt proceeds. That authorization is provided in agency budgets and the capital construction bills. As major projects develop, additional expenditure limitation may be granted by the emergency board. This bill is necessary to carry out identical and agreed-upon House budget and Senate Special Budget Committee actions. The bill is being moved at this time to avoid increased costs and other complications that would happen on numerous projects with further delays. As amended, the bill authorizes dedicated fund obligations and revenue bonds for self-sustaining programs. The bill also provides authorization for pass-through revenue bonds and private activity bonds, which are not liabilities of state government. There are four types of actions that are not yet agreed to and have been left out of this bill. This applies to general fund and dedicated fund obligations for the Department of Higher Education, lottery revenue bonds, and certificates of participation. These bond authorizations will be addressed later in a separate bill. The Senate Special Committee on Budget recommends Senate Bill 5632 be amended and reported out to pass as amended.
Thank you, Senator. Discussion. This is just pretty straightforward, trying to take advantage of some good interest rates since our session's been somewhat delayed and make sure the projects everyone seems totally in agreement with move forward. And we'll deal with the rest of them when we get agreement. Seeing no further discussion, any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. I'm going to hold over Senate Bill 232. Senate Bill 301, relating to use of fiscal force. Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 301 provides a process for preventing and responding to incidents involving use of deadly force by law enforcement officers. The bill requires a planning process in each county which addresses community education and outreach, training, investigations of incidents, and information collection following an incident. The planning process is to be jointly chaired by the district attorney and sheriff in each county. Senate Bill 301 also requires law enforcement agencies to adopt guidelines for the use of deadly force by its officers. Other provisions of the bill include ensuring access to mental health counseling for officers after being involved in an incident where deadly force was used, and requiring these officers not to return to duties that might put them in situations where deadly force might have to be used again for at least 72 hours. The bill also directs when transcripts of grand jury proceedings relating to these incidents are to be recorded and in which cases these transcripts may be made available to the public. The subcommittee proposes appropriating $300,000 general fund to the Department of Justice for reimbursing law enforcement agencies for their activities in carrying out the plan required by this bill and paying for the cost of preparing the grand jury transcripts. Mr. Chairman, I recommend Senate Bill 301A be amended and reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you, Senator. Discussion. Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, having not had the opportunity to hear any of the testimony surrounding this bill, particularly with respect to the transcripts from the grand jury, perhaps the carrier could provide a little bit more information.
Mm-hmm. What I would like to do with the chair's permission is invite forward either Mr. Neely or Ms. Shankle from the Department of Justice. And while he, Mr. Neely, is coming forward, Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, let me just acknowledge at this point that It is outstanding leadership on the part of the Attorney General and his staff, Mr. Neely, Ms. Schenkel, who's seated in the back, and Mr. Pete Shepherd, who's on vacation, I believe, bless his heart, who are most responsible for the measure being before you after a couple of sessions of really hard work. These are the folks who've really worked out the nuts and bolts and details through hundreds of hours of work group meetings, and so I'm going to defer to Mr. Neely to respond to your question.
Mr. Neely, please.
Chair Schrader, Senator Johnson, I don't want to take too much of your time. What I can tell you is that there was a significant amount of discussion that occurred on the policy issues around this bill in the Senate Judiciary Committee. We had at least one, maybe more, discussions there about an array of issues that are contained in this bill. One provision that obviously has caught a lot of people's attention is the provision related to the recordation and release of grand jury transcripts. Essentially, the Attorney General, in reviewing this, the issues around the use of deadly force in a series of work groups around the state, made a determination after significant input that was an effective way for all of the participants in these really often tragic for everybody circumstances to gather some transparency in the process that follows the use of deadly force. I can tell you that this provision was not universally accepted by all the district attorneys. The Oregon District Attorney Association has no position on this bill, and in fact, the acceptance of that specific provision varies from district attorney to district attorney. Again, as I know the Attorney General would want me to remind this committee as well as everyone else who's asked about that provision, it is very, very narrowly crafted to apply only to those instances in which you have officers using deadly force. This has absolutely no impact on any other grand jury circumstances, only these circumstances. And I think that, again, at the end of the day, the Attorney General felt that that was the single best way, and in fact one of the ways that was called for most frequently in his hearings that he conducted, to ensure transparency in the aftermath of one of these events. Does that answer your question, I hope?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Neely.
Yes, Chair.
Senator Carter, then Senator Devlin.
Senator Johnson, Senator Gordley and I, but the total leadership of Senator Gordley, have been working on this for about 8 years. And last session we worked and met with all of the attorney generals from across the state that were available. And this session, Senator Gordley alone has worked to try to bring some productive end to this issue. And we never could get all the attorneys, I might say the district attorneys from across the state to get any one thing done. And this is right. This is true. It's so narrow of a window that nothing else could creep through with it. But, Mr. General, what I want to do is give kudos to the State's Attorney General for his work and to Mr. Neely and his, what's your name?
Ronnell Schenkel.
Yeah, Ms. Schenkel. Thank you very much for your work. Oregon is a human rights state. This is the right thing to do. We should never, as public officials, want there to be any kind of closeted view of what we do. Transparency is so important that any of our citizens that continues year after year after year to ask questions about any of our behavior as public servants, whether it's the police or whether it's the legislature, there should always be transparency. So my heartfelt thoughts to you guys for your work and for doing what has been so important for so many communities across the state today. Thank you.
Thank you for the comments. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things I wanted to point out is that when this was considered by the subcommittee, although it was extensively considered by the Judiciary Committee also, and we did actually have a hearing on it in addition, Although there is some dissension among district attorneys, and I believe there is some dissension among some portions of the law enforcement community, no one actually testified in opposition to this bill in the subcommittee. And so that tells me that people are either supportive or that they are neutral. I clearly don't believe that any law enforcement officer takes the use of deadly force lightly, and I know it has a lasting impact on any law enforcement officer that's actually put into that situation. But I would ask Mr. Neely if he might explain part of the rationale between opening some of the grand jury records versus an inquest process, because I think that's a very important aspect to this, I understand.
If you can respond briefly to that, Mr. Neely, I appreciate that.
I will. Chair Schrader, Senator Devlin, committee members, one of the things that this bill does is contemplate the end, essentially, of the inquest proceedings. One of the things that the Attorney General and the staff, and I would say that Rennell and Pete did incredible work on this, that they found in the course of their listening sessions, as they called them, was that officers in particular felt a tremendous pressure when it came to those inquest proceedings. And in fact, it was almost like they had to relive the incident again. And I think victims also, in some instances, shared those feelings. So in the course of the very long and extensive discussions we had, it was determined that, in fact, we would choose to put aside the inquest proceeding and focus on the grand jury proceeding as the mechanism for really shedding light on what actually happened when these events do occur. And, again, that is what, at the end of the day, this bill does. It says the grand jury process is going to be the transparency. It's going to be where we tell our story. We're not going to go out there and move forward on these inquest proceedings anymore. We're going to just have one proceeding. It's going to happen in a way that is behind closed doors initially through the grand jury process, but the transcripts will all be released so everyone can understand where the district attorney is and what actually happened in the course of those events. I hope, Senator Devlin, that answers your question. And again, I do think that's an important question. I appreciate you bringing it up.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you all. Senator Gordon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's very appropriate that these questions have been raised and that they're being responded to on the record in this committee. I would remind the committee that we passed the budget, the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training budget, which we can look at as kind of a companion piece to the policy and budget in this bill, in that, as you'll recall, we are enhancing training from 10 weeks to 16 weeks. In that enhancement, we're adding training around use of deadly force. We're adding training around dealing with the mentally ill, training around dealing with gang-affected youth. And it is that quality of training that it has been most sorely needed in our training academy. So please see the linkage between the previous DPSST budget and the policy in front of you. And again, this measure is a product of the Attorney General's work group on use of deadly force. And I want to personally say on the record that, and I want to be very clear that Senate Bill 301 is not about assigning blame to police officers who have exercised lethal force. We're very aware of the emotional impact that these officers and their families suffer, and that everyone suffers in that situation. And we seek through this legislation to establish policies that reduce the incidence of police-involved shootings, that do provide for improved training, and that yield the transparency that Senator Carter was referring to, that families and communities need when these tragedies occur, and that help the public and law enforcement to understand each other more clearly. So that is the opportunity set forth in the policy before us, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Further discussion? Seeing none. Objections? Seeing none. It's ordered. Senate Bill 817A, relating to emergency management. Senator Winters, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 817 relates to state and local government emergency communication systems. The events of September 11, 2001, the present condition of the state communications infrastructure, and new federal requirements require the state to move forward on this issue. This bill directs the Office of Emergency Management to coordinate the development of a public safety wireless infrastructure replacement plan for state agencies, including the state police, the Department of Corrections, Department of Forestry, and the Department of Transportation. The plan is to address the consolidation of these agency systems and provide for its future management. The office is to report back to the legislature during the interim on its progress and provide a final plan and funding strategies to the 2007 legislature. Senate Bill 817 also establishes the State Interoperability Executive Council, who is to develop an Oregon Interoperability Communication Plan, which has the goal of achieving statewide interoperability within 6 years. This plan is to provide both short and long-term strategies in addressing the need for the various public safety agencies and first responders to communicate during natural disasters, acts of terrorism, and other emergencies. The bill anticipates the use of $382,000 in existing federal Homeland Security grants funds to hire outside contractors to assist the Office of Emergency Assistance and others in developing these plans. Mr. Chair, just another side note, following September 11th, 2001, Senator Gordley and myself, along with others, state agencies and individuals from the governor's office, as well as the faith community, went to Ground Zero and attended a conference that dealt with some of the problems that had occurred during Ground Zero and 9/11. And one of the major pieces was the issue of communication. And so I think this is very appropriate that we would be looking at all of the communication, both wireless and others, in order so that we're able to address this issue. And your subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 817 be amended and reported with a due pass.
Thank you. Mayor Johnson?
The only other comment I would make is that it isn't just a national tragedy like 9/11 where it becomes painfully clear the need for communication. It happens every summer on forest fires. It is not unusual
We're
to have, I can tell, interoperability. I can tell you from personal experience it was not unusual to have different agencies show up at a forest fire unable to communicate with each other, and it finally resulted in helicopters having to carry 9,600 channel radios so they could have a fighting chance of talking to the guys on the ground. In rural communities like mine with odd topography, we have first responders unable to talk to each other on the way to the scene of an accident. And so it isn't just these huge events that come under the heading of Homeland Security that grab our attention and tug at our hearts for the need for a bill like this. It's everyday life-saving activities in towns all over Oregon.
Further comments? I'd like to thank Ryan for bringing this bill forward, making sure that the chair actually made sure he got to hearing this bill in a timely or sort of timely manner. It is a key issue, and I think Senator Johnson alluded to the importance across the state and country. So I appreciate all your efforts. Really very helpful. Further discussion? Objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Go to Senate Bill 819 relating to health care. Senator Bates.
Thank you, Senator Schrader. Senate Bill 819 came to the Human Services Subcommittee from the Senate Committee on Health Policy and establishes the Interim Task Force on Health Services, which will study and make recommendations and actions that can be taken regarding the long-term viability of health care services. The scope of the study is described, and the intent is to have the task force recommend legislation based on the results of the study. Membership of the task force consists of 8 legislators and 2 others appointed by the governor. The subcommittee amended the bill to have the task force staffed by Legislative Administrative Committee Services and to allow the task force to consult with the Office of Oregon Health Policy and Research for Technical Assistance. The bill will provide the Office of Oregon Health Policy and Research an additional $25,000 general fund appropriation to fund the consultation services because it's expected the task force will have numerous meetings throughout the state. The bill will also provide an additional $30,000 general fund to the Legislative Assembly to defray task force meeting costs. The bill also caps the amount of revenue the Oregon Patient Safety Commission can collect from annual assessments on described health care entities, regardless of whether they voluntarily report adverse medical events. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that Senate Bill 819 be amended and report out due pass as amended. Mr. Chair, just a couple of quick comments so people won't be hopefully too confused. The Oregon Patient Safety Commission was established in our last legislative assembly, and there was a technical problem there collecting the fees to maintain it. This corrects that technical problem. More importantly, this task force is going to attempt to deal with what is the number one issue, according to our latest polls, Oregonians. Health care is the number one issue in the state now. What people are most concerned about is the head of jobs and education, which is the first time we've ever seen that. We're hoping to draw together through this process the stakeholders and start dealing with some of the huge problems facing healthcare delivery in this state and across the nation. We all know the system's not sustainable. We have to find a way to make it so and to make it work better. We have problems of uninsured people, about 18% of the population. We have cost shift problems. We have access problems. We have administrative costs that are driving these costs, I think, faster than anything else. Probably 30% of your health care dollars going to administration. It's going to be a huge task, but one I look forward to taking part in, as do other members of the legislature. If we can come up with legislation that starts dealing with these problems, I will consider this bill one of the most important ones we pass out of the legislation this year. Thank you.
Further discussion?
Just a question. Thank you very much. Senator Bates, can you describe how mental health fits into the work of the Task Force on Health Care Services?
Senator Westland and I consider that to be an integral part of it. Parity in mental health and physical health have to be achieved in order to have any opportunity to really hold your health care costs down and start dealing with problems that we are all facing. You can't separate one from the other as we've done in the past. Another great problem to deal with. We'll work very hard on that. Our mental health care systems in the state are having a difficult time from lack of funding, as well as, again, access problems for those who need it the most.
Senator Gordley, could we worked very hard in the committee on this, because the one thing about this committee, it's all of us, Bates, Winters, Monis Anderson, Westland, and Carter, who have an integrated approach to dealing with health care in our state. So it's a very strong committee who sent that message up front, but it was already with them, but we just had it as a part of the record that it would happen. So our delivery system is in good hands when we talk about whether we talk about behavioral health or physical health in this state with a committee as strong as this one. So it was an integral approach in the conversation, as well as an integrated approach to the thoughts coming along with Senate Bill 819.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Very good. Further discussion? Objection? Seeing none, it's ordered. Senate Bill 1072 relating to forestry policy. Senator Nelson, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 1072 establishes authority for the Oregon Department of Forestry to facilitate the development of stewardship contracts to carry out forest management activities on federal, tribal, and state lands regarding utilization of forest biomass. This measure endorses marketing biomass products as a way to reduce dependence on public funding, provide renewable resources of energy, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and numerous other economic and environmental benefits. The budget part of this, the reviewed the fiscal impact, noting that the initial planning startup costs would be financed through the interagency National Fire Plan Community Assistance Federal Grant Program, so it's federal money, until revenue from the sale of biomass materials is sufficient to cover ongoing costs of this program. The federal funds portion of this bond includes sufficient expenditure limitations to start this program. Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 1072 be reported out due pass.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What are stewardship contracts?
That's a good question. It's the new concept. I think it's a program that's actually been in existence since 1999. There are 80 pilot projects in the state of Oregon. Utah and Colorado seem to have used the largest amount of them. Oregon actually has two going right now, one down the Lakeview area and one over in the Warm Springs portion of the country. But it's basically where the federal government comes in and says, we think something needs to be done with this federal forest. It's a fire danger. It's forest health is bad. We don't have the funds or the resources. We're going to turn this over to the state. And the state goes out and through this, in this bill, the state's Department of Forestry will go out and subcontract with private contractors to clean up the forest and try and lessen the fire danger and to enhance the forest health.
Mayor Johnson.
And I guess I'm having a little trouble following the money.
follow the money.
That's the feds designate the in the stewardship contract the work to the state. The state then goes out and contracts with private contractors. Where does the money come from?
Well, the initial money is coming out of this federal, it's the Interagency National Fire Plan Community Assistance Federal Grant Program. That's the initial money. It's a federal source of funds. It comes from the Department or the Forest, U.S. Forest Service. And so that's the initial portion of it. The idea is that when you enter into these contracts with the federal government and the state, the state forestry department during the course of the contract would say that a certain portion of the proceeds from the use of this biomass comes to the Department of Forestry to help fund these programs. And right now we're talking about adding potentially, if there's any contracts being added in, it'd be five potential FTEs.
One more question.
Last question.
The title in that is the Federal Fire. The question that I have is this money that is being diverted from fighting fire to now creating, it has the appearance, if not the reality, of creating the biomass industry. Is this money being taken away from any fire suppression activities?
No, as far as I know, it is not.
No.
It's basically, I mean, there's a pilot program that the federal government started in 1999, and they're helping to get this thing started, because what they're seeing is that the federal government cannot do this. They don't have the resources anymore to actually go out and get the work done.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson is correct. It doesn't take away from any firefighting capability or resources that would go into suppressing fires. It's a grant that is specifically set up to address forest fuels in the forest, and biomass is part of that grant program and looking at ways of reducing the risk of fires in the forest.
Okay. Further questions, discussion, objections? Seeing none, so ordered. I'm going to go back and allow Mr. Johnny Come Lately the opportunity to vote on Senate Bill 5632, Senate Bill 301, Senate Bill 817, and Senate Bill 819. Senator Westland, how do you, without objection, how do you vote on all those?
I vote aye on all of the aforementioned bills, Senate Bill 5632, Senate Bill 301A, Senate Bill 817A, and Senate Bill 819A, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for voting. I appreciate that. Noted. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you, committee.
Senator Johnson, we're off the record now, but you're...